You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A new exhibition at the Neue Gallery looks at Wassily Kandinsky's painting style as it moved from the expressionism of the Blaue Reiter period to the geometric abstraction of his Bauhaus years. It brings together some of his most famous works from museums around the world and even recreates, for the first time in this country, a 1922 Berlin mural installation. Wassily Kandinsky, from Blaue Reiter to the Bauhaus, 1910-1925, is on view at the Neue Gallery on 5th Avenue and 86th Street until February 10th. I'm pleased to welcome Kandinsky expert Dr. Vivian Barnett to our show. She's the author of his catalogue raisonné and a contributor to the catalogue for this exhibition. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Leonard.
Did Kandinsky originally go into law as a young man and only began to study art at the age of 30? That's really old for somebody to become such an important artist.
It's true, yes. He studied law first. He was even offered a position teaching law. And he traveled a lot on ethnographic research and was interested in the economy and wrote scholarly treatises on the economy and law. But then he did know something about art and he was interested, but it was only when he was 30 that he went to Munich to study painting.
And then got involved enough to change careers.
Yes. And he became a teacher. Well, very soon after, he was a student, so he did everything at once.
And was he living mostly in Russia at this time?
No, he lived in Russia until 1896 when he went to Munich. And then he would go back to Russia for exhibitions or to see his family. But he lived primarily in Europe from 1896 onward until the end of 1914.
And why was that? Because he just didn't like living in Tsarist Russia?
I don't think so. He loved Munich, and he went there to study, as did many other. He was not the only Russian who went to Munich to study, and he studied with Anton Ashbey, along with a whole group of friends from Moscow, and he knew many people, and very soon in 1902, one of his students also became his girlfriend, so that was an incentive to stay in Germany.
This exhibition covers the years 1910 to 1925, just 15 years. Why is that in that period so important?
It's really when Kandinsky had a breakthrough as to what it was that he truly wanted to paint and found his own direction. And also, I think, when he became involved in artists' organizations and in institutions such as the Bauhaus in Weimar and in Dessau.
Well, he's at a point where artists are pushing the bounds of realism, and his early works, while not realistic, still make reference to figures and landscapes. Do you think that he was actually consciously moving toward non-objective art?
Yes, I think he was from about 1908 or 1909 onwards, because Kandinsky wrote a lot. And so he would express himself in his theoretical writings and in articles that he published as what he was seeking, but he didn't find it right away. It took a very long time before he was able to break free from the object and find what would replace the object.
He joined the Blaue Reiter movement, and also his girlfriend was a pretty good artist, Gabrielle Munter.
Yes, she's a good artist in her own right and her own style.
Although she never moved into total abstraction that I can remember.
She painted a few quite abstract paintings, but that was not where her interest lay.
Was he friends with some of the people who would have been around the Blaue Reiter, like Franz Marc and,
yes,
and Paul Klee?
Yes, it was really Kandinsky and Franz Marc who founded the Blaue Reiter. And they met at the beginning of 1911 and became kindred spirits, good friends, and by that summer were planning an almanac. So the Blaue Reiter, the Blue Reiter, was really to be a publication.
And Blue Reiter was also the name of a painting by Franz Marc, wasn't it? Or yep. He painted a lot of horses, a lot of blue horses.
Yes, he painted the blue horses. Kandinsky had painted a blue rider as early as 1903, but I think at that point he had no idea where it would lead.
We have a slideshow of some of the works in this exhibition called Vasily Kandinsky, From Blaurida to the Bauhaus, 1910 to 1925. How important is his interest in music to the way his painting developed?
His interest in music was always very, very crucial and was part of his being. But he didn't intend to paint music. In a way, he wanted to find something that was as expressive without a narrative as music was.
So since music is abstract, but somehow we connect to it, he thought you could do the same thing with a painting?
That was what he sought to do. It was obviously very hard to be expressive and to have people be able to respond in a purely emotional way, because everybody's so used to seeing things in paintings. And Kandinsky was friends with people, especially close to Arnold Schoenberg, who was also trying to break free from tradition and to find a new way of expressing oneself in music.
Can you talk about his concept of Gesamtkunstwerk? What does it mean?
A Gesamtkunstwerk is a German term that goes way back before Kandinsky or even before Richard Wagner, who popularized the term. It really means a total work of art, where painting and music and theater and various means of cultural artistic expression come together.
And in addition to painting on canvas, he painted on furniture, he designed handbags, ceramics, other objects, like some of the other Bauhaus artists. Also did costumes for theater?
Yes, he did costume designs. He didn't make the costumes themselves. Earlier, he had made dress designs for Gabriel Emminter. But at the Bauhaus, yes, he designed theater sets and costumes.
Was the Armory Show the first time people saw his work in this country?
There were some prints that were exhibited at Stieglitz's gallery earlier, but the Armory Show was really the first time anybody saw a painting, and it was one painting that now is in the Metropolitan Museum.
Is it totally non-objective?
No, but many people would have thought so at the time. It would have been very hard to read, to figure out what was going on, and I think probably there are many visitors to the Met who still look at it and think, what is this?
Well, Duchamp's new descending staircase shocked people. Did his work also shock people?
I don't think it had the same really shocking effect. Certainly it surprised people, but it didn't have the publicity. It was not a media attraction the way Duchamp was.
He wound up connecting with Alfred Stieglitz, and did he show at Stieglitz's gallery?
No, he did. Well, he did in 1912, but then Stieglitz, after he bought the improvisation, wanted to show Kandinsky's work, but it never came about, and also the painting that he bought is so large, it didn't really fit into his gallery.
You said that Kandinsky moved back to Russia in 1914. That's before the revolution.
Yes, it was World War I, where he was a Russian citizen and therefore an enemy alien in Germany, and had to leave very soon after the war broke out on August 1st.
So he went to Russia, and then comes the revolution, and a lot of artists saw the revolution as an opportunity to create a new art. It didn't wind up working out that way when Stalin imposed a national style. But was he political at all?
I don't think he was political, no. People would like to make him political, but he... He was really devoted to his art, and in spite of all the wars that he experienced, tried to avoid the politics so that he could work on painting.
And then wound up going back to Germany?
Yes. He was. He had gone to Sweden for a little while in 1916 to meet Gabriel Emminter, but then he went back to Russia and he married Nina Kandinsky. Mm-hmm. And he went back, but he was not totally accepted by the new generation of younger artists and the more revolutionary artists in Russia. And he was kind of old and old-fashioned and romantic to them. So at the end of December 1921, he went to back to Berlin, and ostensibly just for a trip, but stayed in Germany.
At the Bauhaus?
Very soon, within a few weeks, he was formally invited to join the faculty.
And did that influence his style? Because it, it changes. He becomes more geometric.
His style certainly changed in 1922-23 when he was at the Bauhaus. And in some respects, I think the changes reflect also what Malevich and Rodchenko and Tatlin and other artists in Russia had already been doing.
The centerpiece in this exhibition is a recreation of a mural installation he did at the Jury Free Art Show in Berlin in 1922. Can you talk about how he came to create the original mural?
The original mural, he made five studies on gouache panels that are about like a foot by a foot and a half in size. And then he and supervising students painted the murals on four walls and then four corner pieces as well.
And it's been recreated before this, hasn't it, at the Centre Pompidou in Paris?
Yes, it was created there in 1977.
So is the same sort of thing being done from the original sketches for the show here at the Neue Gallery?
It's not quite the same, and also because just of the size of what was done in 77 for the Centre Pompidou is too large to fit into the Neue Gallery and is, in fact, in an exhibition right now in Milan in Italy. But the Neue Gallery recreation also takes into consideration the photographs and the documents where you see the students painting and you see the result.
Should we be surprised that this is at the Neue Gallery? Because the Guggenheim Museum was actually created in a sense as an homage to Kandinsky, wasn't it?
Certainly, Kandinsky was one of the artists that Hilla von Riebe persuaded Salomon Guggenheim to acquire.
She had studied with him, and she kind of painted in a Kandinsky style, and it was originally called the Museum of Non-Objective Art, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it was the Museum of Non-Objective Art for years, but Hilla von Riebe also admired the work of Rudolf Bauer, who was a German artist and follower of Kandinsky, and so that there was somewhat of a falling out between Kandinsky and Riebe.
Another major part of the show is a series of four paintings that he made for the businessman Edward Campbell's apartment, which are now owned by the Museum of Modern Art. How did that commission come about?
That commission came about through an American collector, a Chicago lawyer named Arthur Jerome Eddy, who admired Kandinsky's art and had bought it during the summer of 1913. And he persuaded his friend, who was a businessman and involved with General Motors, and although Campbell's professional training was as a doctor, and it was Arthur Jerome Eddy who persuaded Kandinsky and arranged the commission for the four panels to be made for a Park Avenue apartment that, of course, Kandinsky never saw.
And the Museum of Modern Art didn't have all of them. Didn't they have to wind up fighting to obtain one of them?
Oh, it wasn't a fight, really. I was at the Guggenheim at the time, and two of the panels belonged to the Guggenheim Museum, two belonged to the Museum of Modern Art. And so an exchange was arranged between the two institutions so that the four Campbell panels would be together, and also so that the Guggenheim could acquire a Matisse.
What does this show do for our understanding of Kandinsky's work in the history of 20th century art?
It focuses really on the theater compositions, on his large-scale works, on his installations, while within the context of other paintings, drawings, watercolors, decorative arts that he made from 1908 through to about 1928.
Many believe that he was the first artist to do a completely non-objective work, although I guess the jury is out on that. There are a few other contenders. But was that something that was important to him?
I don't think that, certainly at the time, in 1911, 1913, 14, I don't think that that was on his mind. Many artists were painting and moving in an increasingly abstract manner. But later on, maybe by the 1930s, then Kandinsky would often refer to my first abstract painting, which at the time he had found to be really not very successful work and had not even bothered to catalog or inventory, and was lost for many, many years. But he did try to find it in 1936.
He lived in Paris toward the end of his life, didn't he?
Yes. Really, it was a result of the two world wars, and not to mention the revolution, that Kandinsky changed where he lived. He changed his nationality several times. And by the end of 1933, after the Bauhaus was closed, he moved to Paris, thinking he would stay there a short time. But he did live there, outside in Neuilly-sur-Seine, until he died in December of 1944.
So he couldn't totally escape the Nazis, even in Paris?
No, but they let him paint.
This show, which is of a 15-year period in this great painter's life, is on view until February 10th at the Neue Gallery at 1048 Fifth Avenue at 86th Street. And my great thanks to Dr. Vivian Barnett for coming by to talk about it. You wrote an essay for the catalog, which was on something very specific.
Yes. Yes, and I've also spoken at the Neue Gallery about other subjects, but the person whose idea it was to do the exhibition is Jill Lloyd, who is an English art historian and also a member of the board of the Neue Gallery, and she is the one who unfortunately couldn't be here today and who deserves credit for the exhibition.
But your article was on Kandinsky collectors in the United States. Was he collected extensively?
Yes, he was collected by many different people, many of them ones who came from Germany, such as Galka Scheier, who formed the Blue Four Group and whose works are mainly at the Norton Simon Museum, or Hille von Riebe, who was instrumental in forming the Guggenheim Museum collection, not to mention Catherine Dreyer, whose works are also at the Yale University Art Gallery, among other institutions.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you, Leonard. It's been fun.